It's an interesting world that we live in. Like to watch all sorts of news stories, and I like to listen to all sorts of educational things just because we live in a world that is in many ways much more fascinating than fiction. We were watching a program the other day about a young man in his late teens who's a championship downhill skier. Now, I don't know if you all have much experience skiing. I have very limited experience skiing, although I have extensive experience falling. The honest to goodness truth is I was never a good skier, although I enjoy the process. And because I am not a good skier, my idea of a really challenging ski run is one that just goes downhill. I'm not looking for it to twist or turn. I'm not looking for moguls or jumps. Back in the day when I did ski, because I don't do it anymore, because like I said, I fall more than I ski. I was just looking for the bunniest bunny slope that ever bunnied a bunny. But this young man, he is not like me. He is a downhill skier, he is a racer. He goes down the sheerest, steepest cliffs. He races over the bounciest moguls, turns past trees and boulders, and it is all the more impressive if you watch the news story that I was watching, because he is absolutely and completely blind. The way it works is his father walks him through the course before a race, and they slowly go down the path until he gets a feel for what it's like. And then his father gets on a radio, which is attached to a receiver in the earpiece of his helmet, and his father tells him where to go as he skis blindly down the mountain at full speed racing. Turn left, turn right. In a few seconds you're going to turn left, get ready, turn left. And one of the things the interviewer asked the young man was, when your dad tells you to turn left or turn right or go straight, do you ever like just say, well, you know, I feel like maybe I ought to wait for a few minutes or maybe I don't need to turn quite yet. And the young man says, well, only if I want to hit a tree. Because he trusted his father to be his eyes. He trusted his father because he knew that if he relied on his own almost non-existent sense of vision, he was most certainly going to hit a tree. In today's gospel lesson, we have the story of a man who was born blind. And we know that in the ancient world, being born blind was an almost guarantee that you were going to spend your life in poverty because, well, there were no handicapped accessibility rules back then. There was no exceptions made for those who had differing abilities. And so being blind almost certainly meant that you were going to spend your life as a beggar. And oftentimes this was seen as some sort of personal failing, that there was something wrong with your family. Your parents had done something bad. Maybe your grandparents had been evil in some way. Maybe you were just born a bad person, because why else would God allow someone to exist without vision except as punishment? And so it was very convenient to look at people who were begging beside the roadside, who were blind, and feel superior to them. Not only were they poor and of low station, but surely there was something wrong with them that God would so curse them. And so, when Jesus encounters a man born blind, the question is put to him, whose fault is it? Who is the sinner in this case? Was this man simply born a bad person, and so God chose to show this kind of punishment? Or maybe, maybe his parents were bad people, and God chose to give them a blind son in response of his parents being bad people. Jesus says, you know, sometimes people are just born blind. But God can show his glory in this moment. And Jesus gives the man back his sight. I don't know what that moment was like for that person. I don't know that any of us can imagine what that moment would be like. A person who had never seen It's because it says he was born blind. A person who'd never watched the sunset. A person who'd never looked at the face of their mother. A person who'd never once in their lives seen so much as the color blue. Suddenly seeing the world, what must that experience have been like for him? And he goes, and everyone is surprised, shocked, amazed, and astounded. But this is where the story actually gets weird. Because you would think that all of the story up to this point was the strange part. But this is where the story gets weird. People come up and go, wait, what do you mean God, what do you mean Jesus gave you back your sight? That can't possibly be so. That can't be the beggar that we've seen beside the road. It must be a guy that looks like him. You ever find a person that looks almost just like you and you think, oh my goodness, I've got a twin out there somewhere. I didn't know that. They're like, well, surely this is just somebody that looks like me. He's like, and he's saying to them himself, no, I'm the guy. We know each other. You're used to seeing me sitting beside the road, but here I am standing before you with my vision. And folks are saying, well, that can't possibly be so. How could that have happened? What happened? Who did it? How did he do it? When did he do it? Where did he do it? And if you follow the story further, he actually gets called before the officials who say to him, who gave you back your vision? He says, well, I don't know. It was this guy named Jesus. He just came along and put some mud on my eyes. I washed and I was fine. They ask, are you a follower of this Jesus? He's like, look, the guy just gave me my vision back. To be perfectly frank, I think I like him. Why, he says later in the passage to the city officials, do you want to follow him too? And they react negatively. No, absolutely not. Because Jesus does this miracle on the Sabbath. The day when you're not supposed to do any work. They question, and they question, and they probe, and they doubt. And they make excuses. And it's worth asking yourself one simple question. Who's blinder? The fellow who couldn't see anything because he was born that way, or the people who refuse to see what is directly in front of them because they're being stubborn, because they're being self-righteous, because they're being distracted by their own assumptions. The degree of spiritual blindness. And as easy as it is for us to point at the Pharisees and the Sadducees and say, look at those fools, they were so spiritually blind, they couldn't see God acting in their midst even when something incredible happens. Can we honestly point our fingers at them and sort of snicker a little bit when, if we're being honest, the sort of thing happens to us all the time too? How often do we miss when God does something incredible in our midst? Either because we're so busy looking to ourselves, we're so busy expecting that our perspective is the only perspective. We can't possibly look outside of ourselves because we're so focused inward on our own strength, focused inward on our own perspective, focused inward on our own things that we're going to do. How often do we miss God in our midst because we're busy not looking for God? Because they weren't. To be spiritually blind is a truly awful thing. To be spiritually blinded is to not be able to see the grace and the mercy of God in our midst. To not see God working in ourselves, working in others. And as the people of God, we are called to be something more. We are called to have our eyes open, to expect that God is acting in our midst. That's a really good question to ask ourselves. When you get up in the morning, and you think about your day that you're going to have. You think about what's going to happen, and I don't know about you all, but I have a very busy household. And so we have a fairly well-documented plan. Because if we don't have a plan, we are in danger. Because there's dance 3 nights a week for my little ballerina. There are clubs, there are choirs, there is church, there is work. We have to know what is our weekly menu going to be. And not just what are we having for dinner. We got to figure out what's for breakfast and what's for lunch. Because you got to make that shopping run when you've got a spare 5 minutes. And there's not a lot of spare 5 minutes. You got to have a plan for when people go to bed. You got to have a plan for when people get up. And if you're not careful, every day can be something of a checklist. You know, I got up, check. I made lunches, check. We got the kids to school, check. I got to work, check. Oh my goodness, if you try to throw in other things, that can really throw that schedule off, can't it? And all that day, that check mark box just keeps on going. When we get up in the morning, is one of the tasks that we set out for ourselves to look for God's presence in the world that we live in? Is one of the tasks that we set for ourselves to open our eyes to what God might be doing in a surprising, new, and different way? Is one of the tasks that we set for ourselves to be ready with an open heart when God does something new, to accept that thing and change to match God's choices? Because if we're not preparing to see, we won't. Because as humans, we see what we expect to see. We see what we think we will see. We see what we plan on seeing. And when something happens out of the norm, most of the time we just don't see it. It's easy to point at the Pharisees and the Sadducees in today's story and say, what a shame that those people were so blind when God did something new in their midst. But they didn't get up that morning and say, I think God's going to perform a miracle. Any more than we do. And yet God did exactly that. I get to have a lot of opportunities with our youth to talk to them. I love teaching our youth group. It is a very enjoyable time. Sometimes our youth group will bring me questions to stump the pastor and see if there's a question that they can ask that I don't know the answer to. Sometimes they forget that this is supposed to be biblically oriented, and so they will ask me, you know, what's the square root of 375,612? I don't know. But they oftentimes will ask me about God, and they'll ask questions like, why doesn't God do miracles in my life like he does in the Bible? My answer is always the same. I've seen plenty of miracles in my life. But only when I was looking for them. Only when I expected them. Only when I trusted that God would act in my life did I see God acting in my life. And it wasn't that God wasn't acting in my life when I wasn't looking for it. It was that I was blind and was not seeing. So the question that we all should take away from today's passages, not just the Gospel of John, but also the book of Samuel, and the choosing of the very unlikely son of Jesse. We must be people who are saying to ourselves, am I ready to have my eyes open when God does something amazing in my midst? Am I ready to look, see, experience, and respond when God moves in my midst? Am I watching for it? Because if you're not watching for it, you won't see it. It's not because God's not there. It's because you're not looking. They weren't looking. The only people who saw was a prophet A little boy who thought he was going to be a shepherd and a blind man. All three were people waiting for God to do something amazing in their midst. And God did. God does. God will. Amen.